This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Let me record. Take this poem and stick it in thine ass.
Wow, you really, really classed it up.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, welcome back.
From what? Oh, yeah, from being...
From your death march. We should clap.
All right. That's what you want to do.
You don't have to.
Hang on.
Not
hang
my
on.
Problem.
Hang on. Audio settings? Boop. Good. Do not automatically adjust my microphone volume. Good.
Yeah, don't do that.
All right. Ready?
All right. One, two, three. Wow. Did you go early?
No, I did. That was dead nuts. That was dead on.
All right. Mm-hmm. Internet's feeling good tonight.
By the way, if anyone asks you, did you go early? The answer is always no.
Dead nuts. Oh.
Of course I didn't. That was somebody else.
You have me confused.
No, it couldn't be me. I've always gone very late.
Sometimes you just lie there wondering.
Sometimes.
Is this ever going to happen?
Did I even happen? I don't know.
No.
I'm like a ghost. Was that a ghost? It was.
I've started over back at the beginning, went all the way around, and I missed the end, and I started back over.
I should get a drink, shouldn't I? That drink looks good. What's in your drink?
This is a Manhattan. It's got it's got whiskey in it. And it's actually a perfect Manhattan. An inexpertly made perfect Manhattan, which is it's got bourbon and dry vermouth and sweet vermouth and bitters.
Okay.
And it's real nice. Feels good on the gullet.
I'm going to go get something very similar. I'll be right back.
Yeah, I bet it's going to be very similar. Let's see. Is he going to get a PBR? I'm going to guess PBR. He doesn't really keep PBR in his fridge, I don't think. It's going to be a PBR, maybe a Beast. Definitely a beer. On the right track.
All right, this is called Neutral. And the can is smashed, so I got it for cheap from Aldi. So
is that how they still do that?
They do. They do smashed cans. They stopped doing it with the vegetables because people were getting botulism, but with the liquor, they don't mind.
Nice. So if you go in there, you just throw the cans on the ground. You'd be like,
No, they have cameras everywhere.
This is cheap, right?
They have cameras everywhere. Yeah, they know.
The Amazon Fresh of discount grocery stores. They've got cameras everywhere and a whole team in India watching.
What I love about Aldi, I love this. They have the Aldi by our house, 100% self-check. They have like one belt that if you like buzz the buzzer for a long time, they'll come out and they'll check yourself out. But everything else, 100% self-check. Mm-hmm. And they have one guy that sits behind like interview glass, like the one-way mirror glass, and then watches all the people on camera to make sure they're not shoplifting from there, right? Mm-hmm. Every other grocery store I've been to that has self-checkout, that anti-shoplifting person is standing there watching you.
Yeah, there's
not
like intimidation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's still probably a 17-year-old boy who has to go get help if someone needs to scan alcohol. But
sure,
in this case, the Aldi guy, it's a shame thing, I think. Like, they don't, that's got to be it. Why hide?
I'm not going to call you out for this.
Yeah.
But you know that I know what you did. Mm-hmm. I hope you feel bad.
Mm-hmm. I watched how many avocados you scanned. And even though you put 7 in your cart, you only scanned 6 avocados. I'm so sorry the police are here.
I know it's not really, you shouldn't confess to a crime on record.
Oh.
But I was at Lowe's a few weeks ago and I was getting a bunch of like painting things.
And, yeah, I know how handy you are. I get it.
For, yeah. And I'm also that level of handy when I'm shopping for things. So I'm just like, oh, so I had a roller and like a brush, roller brush. And then I was like, well, I need the plastic trays, the liners, because I'm not going to wash the rolling tray.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm going to throw the handle away. I'm going to throw half the paint away.
I'm very eco-friendly until it comes to anything that I have to do to like work-wise.
So eco-friendly until the minutest inconvenience occurs.
It takes then, less than you'd think.
I'm sorry, planet. Somehow you made paint, and so now you're getting paint back. I don't know.
Yeah, you made Seems this fair. Latex paint. Yeah. So if you didn't want me to use plastic to dispose of it, you shouldn't have made it, nature. So I was there, and I got the tray, and then I got the liners for the tray, and I picked up the plastic liners, and there were like 12 of them. And it was like $3. And I was like, this is actually a great deal.
Yeah.
This is an incredible amount of plastic that I'm about to be throwing away here for so cheap. And so I bought them along with everything else. Went to self-checkout, and I scanned everything. And it was when I got to my office, which I was painting something at school, and I got there, and I pulled the liners out. It was then that I realized these are actually 4 3-packs that were just very tightly stacked together. And I had stolen 3 of the packs because I only paid for one. I didn't feel any regrets about that. The Walmart Corporation, they're doing fine.
Yeah. Should we have done the voice filter on your voice for this? Because I think
Jeremy,
people can tell who it is.
A quick favor.
Yeah.
Real quick. Go back and change the EQ, I think they call that.
Yes.
We'll do. Yeah.
Real low. Yeah.
Do it for Patrick too, so they don't know which one of us is telling the story. Because if you only do it for me, it's not going to help as much as I'd like.
Also, blur out him saying the name Patrick, because that's not going to help the case, obviously.
Yeah. And then blur out Patrick just now saying blur out him saying the name Patrick, because that's going to a smart detective is going to work that case backward. Oh boy. Anyway, self checkout is great. I'll tell you what, those chairs that they use at the Aldi checkouts, those are the most comfortable looking chairs.
Aren't they?
I've ever seen in my life.
They deserve it. They're scanning like 6-7 items a second, something like that. I mean, I don't
they
really
go so fast.
Yeah.
I like how Aldi does like the barcodes that go all the way around the container. And it's genius. Scan it, just throw it through.
So I was in Aldi, a different one that had like a bunch of the belt checkouts in it. And all of them are going. Like, there are 4 and they're all going rapid fire. It sounded like a scene out of like a Marvel movie or something. Just constant beeping and flashing.
Beep, 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 beep.
And I noticed at that time, because I thought, how the fuck do you know which beep was yours? Like, it's constant beeps, right? Uh-huh. And then I asked the guy who was checking me out. I was like, how do you know which beep is yours? He goes, I have no idea. I said, oh, okay. And then I listen carefully, and I notice each of the 4 registers has a slightly different tone for their beep. And I told this, I said, really? I said, if you listen, it sounds like all 4 registers have their own tone. And he gave me the most go away look I've ever gotten in my entire life. He's like, why are you explaining my job to me? Just go.
Boy, the level to which he could not care must have been extraordinary. You know what? Not everyone takes as much pride in their jobs as we did in our Blockbuster job.
Indeed. If someone had like found some like little Easter egg of my job while I was at Blockbuster that I didn't already know, oh God.
Man, be delighted.
I would have hired them.
Now we would have also been half sauced on vodka when they said it. So
now you come back to this side of the counter and show me over here. Here's my login. I'm a manager.
Welcome to Is This a Ghost? As you can probably guess, this is a podcast.
Welcome to Confessions by Is This a Ghost?
It's a new series, a new segment we're doing on the show. I'm Clayton Smith, and every week I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend, Patrick Dean, who doesn't take it real seriously.
But who is back in his proper time zone
you
this week?
Normal. How'd you like the Eastern time zone, though?
Ooh, it was nice. I'll tell you.
It's a nice one, right?
It was nice. Do you know that they start baseball an hour earlier over
it's
there?
The best.
It really is.
You can actually finish a game before bed.
I love it. Yeah.
It's great.
Big fan.
I'm digging the Eastern time zone.
And you guys have the ocean over there too. That was pretty cool.
Ocean is a it's a pretty big one.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the biggest ones I've seen.
Yeah. So I like it. And you know the thing about, we went to the ocean a few weeks ago on this side of the country, and you and I had a quick trip to Virginia Beach once, a quick little dip. Aside from that, like, I never really like spent actual time on this coast at a beach. But you know, the first thing that struck me when we went there was in the West Coast, you look out and the beaches are great, but then like a mile offshore, there are all these tanker ships like waiting in line to dock at the port of Los Angeles. You know, and it ruins the vibe a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah. But here on the East Coast, nah, we don't believe in commerce over here.
Interesting. So
beautiful.
So opposite reaction for me, because down where we stayed outside of Savannah, Savannah is the largest. I think the tour guide said it was the largest shipping port in the U.S. in terms of tonnage. Sorry,
which tour guide was giving you a tour talking about the tonnage of shipping in the port?
We took the Savannah tour. They don't have a whole lot to talk about besides the Confederacy.
Awesome. I didn't know they had a port down there.
Port of Savannah is, he claimed, the largest by weight port in the U.S. I don't know.
I'll be honest. That's probably a lie. And B, if you asked me 45 seconds ago, I would have said Savannah is inland by a lot.
So it's by about 5 miles or so. But there's a huge river that goes to it. Huh. So they load all the shit onto the boats, or they take the shit off the boats.
That's probably the river we talked about when we did the there was that one, the Pirates,
probably
bar or whatever.
Yes,
In Savannah. That you, I think, actually, when we did that one. Now that I'm glad we brought this up, because I remember you saying you were going to go there next time, the Pirates' House in Savannah.
I do remember saying that.
And
I
didn't go.
No, definitely didn't do it. Yeah,
well, you got to go back next year.
I guess I might.
If you go to the Pirates' House, you don't have to do anything there. You can write that trip off.
That's true. I'll have Ryan send me the paperwork.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll make you an honorary business member for like 1 week. What else? Well, we got a lot to do tonight. We're going to record a ghostie after this.
Oh, fuck, I forgot. I mean, great.
I mean, should we get started?
We should.
Let's see. Let me pull up my notes. Here we go. Boop, 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 boop. Ding. Ding. Ding.
Dong.
All right. In October of 1850, a man named George Roberts found gold on Ophir Hill in Northern California.
Ophir.
O-P-H-I-R.
Okay. Ophir.
I suppose Ophir, if you want to be continental about it.
I don't. okay.
I think Ophir. Where, Ophir.
Where's Ophir Hill? And it's in Cali, but where in Cali?
Northern California.
Northern.
I believe it's northeast of Sacramento. Northeast of the home of the Oakland A's, Sacramento. So it's up there, and he finds gold, which is very incredible. Now, remember, this is 1850. In 49 was really when the gold rush kicked off in San Francisco.
Famously, yes.
Now, George Roberts, he's a little ways away. Sacramento's close, but it's a way up there. Mm-hmm. But it's not like a unique thing here. But he is the first person to find gold on Ophir Hill, and he looks at this gold and he says, "I don't know what the fuck to do about this." And so he immediately sells his claim to a company called Woodbury Parks and Company.
Mm-hmm.
For would you like to? Okay, let's say you're. It's you. You're Patrick.
Right. Yep.
And you're like, I'm going to go gold mine. I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about gold. But I'm going to look.
Okay.
And you lucky son of a bitch, you find a gold nugget on this hill.
Mm-hmm.
And you're the only person. Now, you know your limitations. You know there's no way you're digging through that.
My limitations are many. I am but one man with one shovel and only so much attention span. So
that's correct. But you could sell it. You realize you can sell it. How much, what's the least amount of money you're taking, in today's dollars, money you're taking for your claim? Let's say it's, I don't know, half a mountain.
Half a mountain? I mean, even just by
like
itself.
Like half a small mountain.
Okay, so a hill. I'm going to say no less than $10 million.
Okay. That's what I think that's fair. That's thank great. You. Maybe a little inflated. I would settle for probably less than that.
Oh no, I mean I'm starting there. Let's be clear. Okay. I'm starting.
That's your negotiating position.
Yeah. I read the book. I know how this goes.
Well, George Roberts starts at $350. Now that's in 1850 money. In today's money, that's about $13,000.
Okay. All right.
And this mining company's like, oh, yes, sir. You got yourself a deal. So he sells this gold mine for $13,000, which is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough. Now, the Woodbury Company has several claims in the area. They kind of surround this new claim.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, they're oh so happy to add this one to their portfolio for $350.
Especially the guy whose budget this comes out of. He's like, do you have any idea how many boats I'm going to buy with the rest of this budget?
I'm going to be so far in the black, it's going to be green.
Mm-hmm.
So the Woodbury Company, they combine now. They consolidate all their claims into one big claim, and they call it the Ophir Hill Mine.
Mm.
They're so excited. Unfortunately, this company was really bad at finances, though. And after about 6 months of just extraordinary mismanagement, they had to sell the business at auction.
Whoa! When you own a literal gold mine.
A literal gold mine.
Like they call some things that are not gold mines, gold mines, to convey their value.
This is the platonic form of this thing people talk about. So I don't know how you fuck up that badly. And especially when you eventually hear how much... I want you to remember this moment in the story when you hear later on how much money was eventually pulled out of the earth of this mine because, ooh boy. So they sold at auction. They're bought up by John P. Rush and the Empire Quartz Hill Company.
Mm. Okay.
All right. So in 1854.
Sounds like a mom and pop deal.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Sounds like a string band. John P. Rush and the Empire Quartz Hill Company. So John Rush in 1854 was bought out, and then the company becomes the Empire Mining Company. So okay. This thing is changing hands very quickly.
Yeah.
And no one's getting a good deal on it. But finally, 4 years after the gold was discovered and, what, four ownership changes later, folks finally get down to the actual business of mining this mountain. So now, as with a lot of gold mines...
I'm sure those folks are like... Wait, you mean it's like a literal gold mine? I thought you'd just been...
I thought this was a figurative thing the whole time.
Yeah, I thought you were just being hyperbolic. No, you like, you know, we have to like get shovels and stuff.
Oh, man. It seems really actually kind of hard to do this. No, I'm sorry. No.
So, wait. So where is the gold? They're looking around.
Yeah, like, so we just...
Where like, is it?
I got my arms. We just pick it up. Is that... No? What? We have to do what? So as with a lot of gold mines, the Empire Mine has gold that is stuck in with the quartz.
Yes.
Which we've talked about this before.
Yep, absolutely.
On this show.
Mm-hmm.
As you recall, I'm sure.
Yeah, I believe
and you can
I wanted
push the
to...
quartz open with one finger.
Mm-hmm, yes. I believe don't we melt something in the process? Do we melt one or the other or something like that?
I think we melt something.
Yeah.
Or we smelt something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we dealt something. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I believe so. There's a separation process I do believe involves meltation, is what they call it. So when you're mining this gold, it's called hard rock mining because you're mining hard rocks.
Right.
Not to be confused with the cafe, which is a whole different thing entirely.
Yeah, but it is named after this, from what I understand.
Yes, correct. Yeah, yeah. People think it's about the music. No.
Absolutely not. It's about this stupid gold stuck in this stupid rock.
Because they're like, hey, this is the gold mine equivalent of a restaurant. People are going to give us $20 for French fries if we put you know, Ace Frehley's face on the wall. It's going to be great. So, let's see. So, they're doing hard rock mining. Now, the Empire Mining Company, they're ready to do some mining. There was only one problem. They don't really know how to do hard rock mining.
I was going to say, this seems like maybe why it's been changing hands so much.
Yeah, no one buying this mine is the right person to buy this mine. No one actually knows how to be a miner.
A bunch of private equity just swoops in and they're like, ah, I can turn this thing around.
It is close to Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, yeah, it's weird because like they're a mining company in California during the California gold rush where they can't mine the gold that's there, but there's probably just a lot of people throwing money at this rush, and they're all back. Anyway, so they reach out. They don't sell the mine. They're going to figure this out. And to figure out how to mine in Hard Rock Mining, they reach out to a bunch of miners way over in Cornwall, England.
Oh, wow. That's way over there.
It's pretty far. And the reason they do that is because there's a lot of tin and copper mines in Cornwall.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And those also require hard rock mining.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. England does not strike me as a place that has gold mines.
We've got a lot of mines.
Ireland. Not gold. That I could see. But okay. Just obviously.
Yeah.
With the pots and the leprechauns and the dancing.
Yeah,
you got it.
Yeah.
But
it's rainbow mining.
Yeah, absolutely. But tin. I could see England having a whole bunch of tin.
The way I've seen Mary Poppins and the way that Bert walks around with all those pans on his back, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, for sure. Tin is the right kind of metal for England. Absolutely. So they're really good at hard rock mining. So these guys are experts. They are completely indecipherable experts. And so a bunch of them come over to advise this operation, and they bring with them something called a Cornish engine.
Oh, okay.
And this is where you dial back into the story.
Okay.
So you ever heard of a Cornish engine?
No.
Or
no.
Are you a bad engineer?
I have not heard of a Cornish engine.
Okay. This is a steam engine.
Okay.
It's a steam engine beam engine.
Steam engine. Are you making fun of the engine? I'm not sure what's going on.
No, no, it's not a fun nursery rhyme. It's a steam engine beam engine. Do you know what a beam engine is?
I don't know what a beam engine is.
God, I thought you
were. I know you got to explain everything to the dumb engineer. I'm not sure where you're even going with this.
A beam engine. I'm going to say this wrong. I'm going to make sure. It's like, I think it's almost like an oil derrick. You have this beam that goes back and forth.
Okay.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And it puts pressure down and then plunges things. I don't know.
Oh, this is a good explanation.
You ever do any mining?
No.
A beam engine is a type of reciprocating steam engine where pivoted overhead beam is used to transfer the force from a vertical piston to a vertical connecting rod. Is that anything?
I need to see a photo. I'm an engineer. I stopped understanding words about 20 years ago.
This photo is not going to help, I think, but... Yeah, you do this
part. Yeah, I'm way ahead of you. Okay. Oil derrick. That's an excellent example of it.
I told you. Told you it would be flawless. So they bring this over. They use it to remove water from mines.
Right. Yep.
Which is really important because if your mine has a lot of water in it, it's hard to get down beneath that water.
And you're constantly pulling the bodies back out and they start to rot.
It takes so much time. You got to do the paperwork and stuff. So the Cornish engine is also good for powering man engines. And this is not a term I'm making up.
This is Google engine. Okay.
Don't. I have a good one for you. So a man engine, this is a quote, is a mechanism of reciprocating ladders and stationary platforms installed in mines to assist the miners' journeys to and from the working levels. And I found for you a very helpful animated GIF.
Oh, yes.
And here is a man engine.
Wow. Okay.
This is some early Mario Brothers that shit.
I love this. Looks like one of those elevators that's in like a old Soviet bloc office building that somehow is still being used. That's the vibe I get from this. The fact this was used in a mine to any degree of success is not surprising.
Yeah, so you've got this water wheel on the one side, and it's fed, of course, by water, and that turns, and that moves these pistons. There's two pistons there.
Yep.
And then this beam goes back and forth, like an oil derrick beam.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But it's hanging vertically from each end of the beam is a series of platforms, like a vertical, I don't know, probably piece of metal with platforms every, I don't want to say, based on this photo, 7 feet. And they go up and down, and you just hop from one platform to the other, and it brings you up, and you hop to the next one, it brings you up, you hop to the next one. And I can't imagine how many limbs were lost because of this fucking thing. This is crazy.
You just get done with your 20-hour shift down in the mines, and then
now leap,
and now it turns into a fucking Lemmings level trying to get back home.
It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. So great for productivity.
Mm-hmm.
Great for getting people, because now you can dig a serious vertical shaft,
mm-hmm.
and get these miners out. You don't have to worry like the incline, which is what they normally had to do. Right now, you just go straight down for a long.
Well, and the other nice thing about the man engine or whatever is you can go up or down using it. Right, just depends on when you transfer between platforms.
Yeah.
So, which I'm sure is really exciting at different times of day. Like, are you getting up? Or am I going down? Or are you?
It's kind of like my arm situation where you have to have someone at the top with a stop sign and says, "Wait a minute, we have people coming up now." And then, okay, slow. You turn it around and it says slow. If you run into someone while transferring platforms, you both get decapitated. So, that's amazing. So, anyway, so they have these Cornish engines, they're moving men, they're pumping water, and now they're in business. Mm-hmm. Now, finally, these miners are like, okay, let's get rich. These engines can pump out 18,000 gallons of water per day.
Oof. Okay.
And this is 1854. So that feels pretty good.
Mm-hmm. So how many gallons of water would that be today?
72 million gallons of water. Water inflation in California has been quite steep.
I cannot imagine how much water that is today.
So now they can actually work down there, and they can expand the mine because the water is gone.
Yeah.
And they can put men real far down there.
Yeah. You know how you were really terrified to go any further down this tunnel? Well, we got rid of most of the water in it for now.
Does it also get rid of the chuds? Oh, no.
Oh, absolutely not.
Actually, no. It makes it more habitable for chuds.
We're hoping some of them dry out, but who knows, really.
So finally, this literal gold mine stops losing money and starts making some. And it's going great. In 1869, a man named William Bowers Bourne acquires a controlling stake in this mine.
Hmm.
But he dies just 5 years later. So his estate takes over the controlling stake in the mine. Mm-hmm. And after a few years, the estate was like, honestly, we find this all pretty boring.
Yeah.
So they abandon the mine.
Oh, really?
Now, it's still producing. They're still finding gold.
Right.
I assume that gives us a good insight into how many mines these idiots own, because there's a producing mine. They're like, yeah, we're just gonna move out of here. They start focusing on a mine called the Rich Hill Mine, which probably was a pretty good one too, based on the
name. It's fair. Yeah.
This is 4.5 hours away, and that's today by car. So they pull everyone out of the Ophir Hill Mine, the Empire Mine here, and they move them to Rich Hill Mine, very far away. But William Bourne's son, William Bourne II,
mm-hmm.
he decides to keep up the Bourne legacy.
Oh.
Pretty proud of myself.
Pretty good.
And he was like, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't have just stopped mining the Empire Mine. Maybe we should have kept that going.
So he gives them a Bourne ultimatum then.
God damn it. So he forms a new company called the Original Empire Company, though it is not. And he takes over the assets of the Empire Mining Company, and he goes back to work on the Ophir mines.
Yes.
Now, this proves to be a little difficult to start, because when the company had left the mine, of course, now they're not running the Cornish engines, and so the water has come back in.
Okay.
So the mine is completely flooded.
Right.
And William, too, is not expecting this. Mm. He thinks to himself, oh, fuck it, goddammit. But he raises the right financial backing, and he gets the thing going again, gets the engines pumping. Eventually, the water comes back out. And so William, too, and his younger cousin, George Starr, they mine at the mine. Under their leadership, the mine of Ophir becomes just unbelievably profitable. And we'll talk about numbers here in a little bit. In 1884, William II and George, they buy another mine called the North Star Mine.
Mm-hmm.
And they also turned that mine into a major producer. And then they sell both the North Star Mine and the Empire Mine together as a package deal to a man named James Haig. And they fucking cash out.
Mm-hmm.
They make so much money. But Haig, the guy who buys it, is another one of these guys who can't actually figure out how to make the mine work because now it's such a huge system. He's like, I can't mine this much. I don't know what to do here. I don't have the infrastructure for this. Because it's at this point, they've gone down, they've gone out. Mm-hmm. It's by a huge system. So at this point, and I mean, fucking huge. The Empire Mine at this point spans over 367 miles of underground passages.
It's like Cleveland underground.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
this is more. What is it? Chicago to St. Louis is like 320 miles or something.
Yeah.
This is more gold mine than that. It's unbelievable. So Haig is like, I didn't realize what I was buying here.
This seems really dangerous.
It's too big. Yeah. I don't like this. And so what's happening here? My computer just did a weird thing. Anyway, so he doesn't like this. And he says, I can't mine this. And so William II comes back and he says, we'll buy it back from you for less money.
Ooh.
And they do. And he sells it. So Haig takes a loss and Bourne makes even more money buying this stupid thing back.
A bit of a Bourne conspiracy, wouldn't you say?
Shut up. No, that one doesn't work. Okay, it does kind of work. I hate it. So Bourne goes back. And he's just going along his merry fucking way, getting just rich as hell off this gold mine. And this time, Bourne decides he's serious about keeping the mine.
Mm-hmm.
What's the other title?
The Bourne
name. Any more Bournes?
Identity. I haven't found a good one for that yet. I'll
keep an eye out.
I will.
He's serious about keeping the mine now. So serious that he decides to build a home on the property.
Hmm.
He commissions an architect named Willis Polk to design what he calls the cottage.
Mm-hmm.
And the cottage includes a house, a greenhouse, gardens, fountains, a reflecting pool, a clubhouse with tennis courts, a bowling alley, and squash courts. little summer cottage.
Sure. Yeah.
Here's a picture of that summer cottage.
Oh my goodness. That's a beautiful, beautiful stone cottage.
It's a cool building. And the stones that they use for this are all excavated from the mine.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
Which is great. I really like this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Not pictured are the gardens and the swimming pool and the tennis courts and all that stuff. Let's see. So he's got this beautiful house. It's a summer home. It's great. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. The mine keeps producing.
Mm-hmm.
In 1928, Bourne then finally sells the mine to Newmont Mining Corporation.
Mm.
And his timing is pretty good because in 1942, just, you know, a little more than a decade later, gold mines were defined as non-essential industry to the war effort.
Oh. By
the U.S. government. And therefore, operations were shut down completely during World War II. For almost 3 years. And so these people had literal fucking gold mines that they could not mine.
And I bet the guy in the tin mine in England's like, oh, ho, ho, what are you doing now? Can't get enough tin over here, huh?
It's super essential tin. Is tin good for war?
It is. It's in everything, really.
Name three war things tin is in.
Tin cans.
Shit, okay. Mm-hmm.
Tin foil. They use that to wrap around. You know, they can crunch into a very tight ball and throw it at the enemy.
When was tin foil invented?
Mm.
When do you think tin foil was invented?
1912.
Late 19th century, apparently. It's crazy. All right, fine. That's two.
Tin is in solder, which is what you use to wire
is tin
wire
in
things.
A soldering material? Mm-hmm.
Yep. Tin is a.
Oh no! Look in your face solder. Suggests maybe it's not, and you're just.
You can Google
the fact
it.
That I have no idea.
Please Google it.
No, I'll trust you.
I don't think I will.
Yeah. All right. So smug English bastards are having a great time. but over here, the gold companies are not so much. And after the war ended, mines could reopen. there was a suspicious lack of skilled miners left to work. I don't know why.
Strange. Wonder where they all
went.
Can't
imagine. I don't know. I do. They're pretty good frontline material, I think. These unskilled miners. So that wasn't good for the mine. So they reopened. There weren't a whole lot of people to mine them. And then by the 1950s, inflation was so bad that gold mining was no longer profitable at all.
Mm.
So just the industry kind of collapses. Until Alex Jones comes along and has so many commercials. So in 1956, a bunch of miners go on strike over low wages. And that's the nail in the coffin for the Empire Mine. It officially closes on May 28th, 1957.
Mm-hmm. See, if I owned a gold mine, here's how I would pay the miners. I would say everything you take out on the weekend, yours. Keep it.
Monday, now you are going to have to work 7 days.
Yeah, Monday through Friday is me. Saturday, Sunday, whatever you pull out, that's finder's keepers.
Wow, you Saturday, were just Sunday. Born to break unions, huh?
I was.
That's an innate skill.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Let's see. During its time in operation, the Empire Mine had produced more than 165 tons of gold.
165 tons, okay. How much is a ton of gold worth? Probably a lot.
How much is 1 ton of gold worth? Okay, so 1 ton of gold is currently worth approximately $107 million.
Okay. So now the math gets hard because it's a lot of three-digit numbers.
107 million times, what did I say?
165.
$17,655,000,000.
It's a lot.
Remember all those guys? Remember the guy who sold it for $13,000? Idiot. So it's 165 tons of gold, which is a lot of gold.
Mm-hmm.
By the time they closed the mine, it had reached an incline depth of 11,007 feet, which is more than 2 miles. And some of the straight vertical drops they could do because of their man engines are more than 1,000 feet straight down.
Oh.
That's skyscraper level. It's unbelievable. Anyways, it's a huge mine. The property is now a California State Park, so you can go and check it out.
Oh, hey. Do you get to go down into the shit?
I think, well, no. The short answer is no. But I think the openings are there, as we'll discuss here in a second.
Yeah.
Because some things come out of them.
But I would figure as soon as they turn the pumps off, it probably just all flooded.
You can't go that deep.
Right.
But you can go, you put in, you know, just you can broach
just
tip.
Yeah, just a bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can go there if you have a strong constitution, I guess, because a whole lot of miners did die in the Empire Mine.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go there and you go over to the mines, you can hear the sounds of the miners shouting from the tunnels today, even though, of course, they've been closed off for like 75 years at this point.
Right.
You can also hear the clang of machinery running down in the tunnels. You can hear the sound of a ghost Empire mine or Cornish engines. That's the word. Jeremy, make that sound real smooth. You can hear the ghost of the Cornish engines just going to work down there. moving men. Decapitating men, making new ghosts for the future. One travel writer went to the park to write a fluff piece on just like quaint roadside attractions.
Mm-hmm.
And ended up being scared to absolute shit when he saw three translucent men come out of one of the mine shafts. And they were screaming at each other about how they were never going back into the mine again. And then they got a few feet out of the mine mouth and they disappeared. The cottage itself is also haunted by the spirit of William II. Docents of the park building have logged, quote, feeling a ghostly presence in the house, hearing creaking floorboards, and feeling cold drafts out of nowhere with no explanation.
Hmm.
So I think most of the ghosts we assume are now underwater.
Okay.
So you don't have to hear them because it's hard to hear that sound to travel. But they're down there. They are down there for 11,000 feet and 367 fucking miles worth of ghosts. Down under this state park in California.
Hmm.
Also, just a quick note for anyone, any listeners who decide to do additional research on our topic, which I assume there's probably probably, I would say 90% of our listeners are like, this has inspired me to do more research. If you go and you look for Ghosts of the Empire Mine, you are going to Google that, and you are going to see there are also articles about the Haunted Empire Mine Road. I've done the rabbit hole work for you, and I'm here to tell you in a very frustrated voice that that has nothing to fucking do with this mine, it turns out. Not related. But it is very haunted, and it's actually, that's the subject of our next ghostie, which we're going to record next.
Oh.
So if you're not a Ghost Plus member, this is a good time to get it going. We are going to talk very soon about the Empire Mine Road haunting, which is very different and very scary. So if you want to check that out, go to isthisaghost.supercast.com and start your free trial. And it'll be probably worth it, maybe, I think. Salesmanship.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so that is the story of the Empire Mine. Any closing thoughts, Patrick?
I love a good mine episode. I love the idea of people tunneling, like little like little animals, until eventually too many of them start to die, and then they stop.
Little gerbil, little gerbil trails under the water,
just love
under
it.
The ground. Let's see. Well, I guess that's it for us today. Is This a Ghost? This is a production of Smith Show Media. All the notes were taken this week by me, Clayton Smith. All the funny jokes were from Patrick Dean. Our video editor is Jen Swanson. Our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. Our social media team consists of Kai Valonis, Jennifer Jones, and Sam Murdoch. And our merch is managed by Fox and Quill Studios. They're doing some great work over there. Go check out the site, isthisaghost.com. And if you like this show, you should tell everyone you know about it, because it's pretty fun. I'll be honest, we do this almost every week, and it's pretty fun. And while you're waiting for the next episode next week, don't get involved with the California Gold Rush. I think they've put the lid on that one. But in case you it becomes too intoxicating for you to ignore, do not. I got to tell you, do not Gold Rush in California. Otherwise, we'll be talking about you next week on Is This a Ghost?